Welcome to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System, here with my co-host Rudy Bush of the Dallas Morning News. Rudy, you and I have both lived in cities where public transportation is the primary mode of local travel. Here in Texas, people like their cars or their big old trucks. But as Dallas continues to grow as a world-class center of commerce, the ability to commute by light rail or bus becomes more and more important. And our guest for this episode is the city's key visionary in this space. She's a relative newcomer to Dallas, having joined us last summer after spending some time in Los Angeles County. DART President and CEO Nadine Lee, welcome to the Deep Side.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you started with DART in July, correct? Give us just a little thumbnail sketch on your background so we can get to know you, since you're a newbie to our fine city.
Okay, well, telling you a little bit about myself. So I am what I refer to as a recovering highway engineer. I got my start in Kansas City, Missouri, working for a private consulting firm. And I worked on highway projects back in the day before I had a chance to move to Denver and work on transit projects, which was, of course, my first love. I was no longer embarrassed to tell people what I did for a living. Really proud of it. So I worked in Denver for 18 years, and 10 of those years were working in public transportation for the Regional Transportation District, where I was working a lot on the bus system and delivering a bus rapid transit project between Denver and Boulder. And that was a project that I opened just as I left to go to Los Angeles to work in the Office of Extraordinary Innovation for Los Angeles County Metro. And so I kind of cut my teeth in executive leadership at Los Angeles Metro, becoming the chief of staff after I worked for OEI. And then it was during that time that I actually was approached to apply for this job here at DART. And so so the rest is history, as they say. Now I'm here.
Well, you and I were talking as we met each other down in the lobby here in our building, and we were kind of talking about some similarities between Dallas and Los Angeles, and really the layout and the spread out is pretty similar, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people probably cringe when I say that Dallas is a lot like Los Angeles, but there are so many similarities that I just want to point out for everyone. Number one, it's very low-level development in terms of not being a lot of high-rises, and of course, we do have high-rises in certain areas in Dallas, Dallas-Fort Worth region, but it's very decentralized, very much like Los Angeles. There's Los Angeles' downtown isn't the center. Dallas downtown is more of a center than Los Angeles is, but the decentralized nature of the development pattern in the Los Angeles area and in Dallas-Fort Worth, I think, is where I see a lot of the similarities. The other thing that I think is really exciting about Dallas, and one of the reasons I'm glad to be here, is that the demographic makeup of the population here is also very much like Los Angeles, which, of course, if you've ever lived in Los Angeles, one of the richest, most diverse cultures that you could find anywhere in the world exists there. And I think that is certainly present here in Dallas also, which is very exciting. And so, of course, everybody knows Los Angeles as a car-centric culture. Dallas obviously is. Maybe I should say it's a truck-centric culture.
But, for sure.
But, you know, it's one of those places where it's difficult for people to get their minds around using public transportation. And so I know we're going to talk more about that.
Well, that's what I want to I want to move into, your assessment of DART as a system. And I'll give you a little bit of kind of my background of knowing the system and having covered the system. But really, my earliest memories of DART were in the late 90s or the mid 90s, when we were having referendums on the light rail system and how that was really a touch point for people politically, whether they would support it or not support it. And of course, I vividly remember the signs in people's yards, you know, vote no, and a pretty strong political movement against making this generational plus investment in light rail. And of course, we did make that investment in Dallas and in many of the suburbs. I think it was the right decision. But in some ways, that system has not realized what I think was at least in the imagination of people who voted yes for it. Meanwhile, you have a bus system that has some inefficiencies in terms of helping people connect in timely ways from point A to point B, or sometimes point A to point B to point C back to A. So just laying that history out and that groundwork out, what is your assessment of what DART does really well? What does it need to do a lot better? And what is the future going to look like?
That's a great question. I actually think that DART's future is super exciting. And the reason I say that is because, you know, we've just celebrated 25 years of light rail here at DART. And that means, even though it's 25 years, that's a lifetime for some people, it means that DART is still quite young. And so we're still developing. And, you know, we've made a number of investments in the light rail system. You know, I think it's about $5 billion is what I understand the investment was to build out the current system as we know it. We have Silver Line under construction. We can get into that more later. But one of the things that was most attractive to me coming here was the fact that all this infrastructure has been built, right? I mean, for all intents and purposes, we're almost done. And that means that we're turning into an operating organization. And the great opportunity that we have right now is that we can actually become an operating organization that excels at delivering service to people. And that means leveraging the investment that we've already made in the light rail system and serving people really, really well along those rail corridors. It means leveraging the bus system and making it work impeccably well, which is also very exciting. We're getting ready to launch DART Zoom on January 24th. We can talk more about that later. But the whole idea is to pull together all these different modes and leverage them to their highest and best use so that we can actually move people the way a real city should. And I think, you know, we really have to think about, you know, how do we want to leverage the things that we have to help solve our mobility problems. What I used to say in Los Angeles is that, you know, we don't want people to travel less because we want people to be prosperous and have reasons to travel. But what we want people to do is have options on how they travel so that they're not having to get in a car or their truck and using like a single occupant vehicle every time they need to go somewhere.
No, I beg your pardon. I didn't mean to step on you. But what I agree with you that there's a lot of future upside. And one thing that I tell people when they criticize the light rail system is you're probably not. We're not investing in the light rail for us. This is an investment that we anticipate might pay off for our grandkids, right? And that the city will look differently at that time. At the same time, we sort of have a responsibility, right, to maximize the efficiency of the system in the current time period. So what do we need to do to make sure that our buses are on the right routes and that those people who are utilizing the light rail are getting an advantage over getting in a car? Because right now for me, and this is the persistent criticism, right? And I'm sure you heard it in LA and you'll hear it here a million and one times, is there's no advantage to me. Of course, I have a wildly privileged life in the fact that I have a car and I can pay tolls and don't have to struggle with the gas bill and all those sorts of things. But there's zero advantage for me to take DART, right? So how do we change that over time, or is that part of the goal?
So I do think that's part of the goal, and you have such a complex question that you just asked me. But I love talking about this because I think that a lot of times people think of transportation as this this fight between a car and transit, or rail and bus, or cars and walkers, and the fact is that it's a system. And it's a system that provides different types of transportation for different types of needs and different types of people. Some people don't have access to cars at all, whether that's because it's an income thing or because, you know, they just, you know, maybe their car's broken down. And so they are forced to, or they want to, sometimes by choice, take an alternative mode or a different option, right, in terms of how they travel. I think it's really important to give people choices.
Yeah.
People should not feel like they have to use, you know, a large percentage of their income to own and operate a car. That is really difficult for a lot of people. But at the same time, if that's either their choice or if they don't have any other options, what I always said in my previous work is, you know, if transit is your only option, it should be the best option it could be, and you should be able to rely on it. And so I think in this country, actually, I think we haven't valued that as something that we really want to do for people. And so I think it's really important for us to think about how we leverage all forms of transportation to make it work really well for people. We talk a lot about dignified rides for people. You know, when we talk about bus riders, when we talk about essential workers. I always say that, you know, bus riders and essential workers are the same thing. And so, you know, they're the same people. And so we really want to provide those folks, rides that they can rely on, because their jobs depend on it. You and I, we don't punch a time card. But we also can drive sometimes, right? So, so we can usually get to our destinations on time. For somebody who has two, maybe three jobs and has to punch a card, it's not going to work for them if our bus isn't on time, or if it doesn't show up at all, or if our rail breaks down. So having that different perspective on why we need to maintain our system and operate it really well and make sure that our service is available at all times, I think there's a different sort of moral imperative there that maybe we haven't emphasized as much before.
I agree.
So I wanted to give you sort of my layperson's experience with DART, particularly the rail. I haven't ridden the bus, but I've at one time I commuted occasionally with DART on the light rail from the Royal Station on the Green Line. Our UNT Dallas campus, there's the Blue Line goes there, so when I have meetings there, I'll go from downtown to there, and I also have connected with the Denton system and gone up to Denton, which I find, you know, all that pretty useful. My biggest criticism would be speed compared to some other cities. I've lived in Chicago and New York, and there's express train options during commute times, and really, when you get to downtown, there's so many stops, right, that it slows you down. And that was really, for me, the reason I didn't commute with any regularity, was because it was taking me about twice as long to do my commute, honestly. So I guess, what would you say as far as, you know, progressing from that challenge? The other challenge I would say is, you know, we have sort of the spokes but not the wheel model. And I know you mentioned the Silver Line. Maybe you can get to that as well. So I've kind of giving you about three questions in one there, but maybe kind of comment on my experience and what you would respond to that.
Well, in terms of how to improve the experience for everyone, one thing that I think is important for us to understand is that there are a lot of reasons why people don't even consider transit as an option. One, if you think only about the rail lines, they don't really go that many places. They go long distances and they go faster than, you know, you might be able to get on a bus or sometimes even by car, but they don't hit every place that somebody might want to go. And so I used to put up a map of the metro rail lines in Los Angeles, and, you know, if you really look at it and how, you know, completely broad the county is in terms of its footprint, the light rail lines were quite sparse in terms of where they would reach. But then I would overlay the bus system on that, and all of a sudden, everything in between all the rail lines got filled in. And that's kind of what we're trying to do with DART Zoom, is to fill in all the blanks between the rail lines so that we can provide better access. We're not just going to feed the rail system. We're going to provide cross-town access. And, you know, in some cases, somebody doesn't even need to take a train in order to get to their destination, because it's not super convenient to, you know, to take a bus, you know, to a train station and then take your train and then take another bus. It's not that convenient to use the bus as the last mile all the time. But if you could take a bus with easy transfers directly to your destination from where you live with just maybe one transfer, that would be amazing, wouldn't it? And so I think there's a huge opportunity to improve the bus system and really leverage it. At DART, we only have 700 buses for a 700 square mile service area. That's not very many buses. I think we could be providing a lot more bus service for this area and provide additional coverage through GoLink, which is our microtransit service. And I think there's just a lot of opportunity to fill in, like I said, fill in all those areas where we don't have services for people. That way, if we were to do that, we would be able to get people where they need to go without driving a car. One of the things that we've learned, as well as other people in other cities who have done a big bus network restructure, is that there are a lot of trips happening in the midday, not just during the peak periods. And so our entire system is designed, all the capacity on the highway, all the capacity on the rail system, all of it is designed to deal with peak period travel, which of course during the pandemic is not really happening, right? What we have seen is greater travel on the weekends, greater travel during the midday. We find that most people are traveling between 2 and 5 miles. So even though we've designed our system for the work trip, Most people are not taking work trips all the time. That's not most of the travel that people do. And so we're trying to figure out how to provide a transit system that actually works for the types of trips people want to take and take often. And that's how we'll probably be able to serve people a lot better.
We've all alluded to the car or truck culture of Dallas. And, you know, so you've got a challenge to try to get people to think differently, right, to begin to take advantage of public transportation. And I would say this, I think it's me personally, and I don't think I'm alone, I would be more apt to jump on a train than a bus for whatever reason. I think buses are confused, and maybe there's stigmas around buses that are right or wrong, I don't know. But, you know, how do you work to try to change the mindset here in Dallas? Because I think that's something that's got to happen.
Well, I always say that it's really unfair to compare bus and rail, because we give rail all kinds of benefits and amenities and attention that we don't give to the bus system. So, you know, in defense of the bus system, which I really care deeply about, you know, I'll just say that, you know, when we plan a rail system, when we plan a rail station, we don't give any thought to the fact that we provide shelter, seating, and lighting for the customers who are using the rail system. We don't guarantee that for bus riders. If you go out and you see a bus stop anywhere in Dallas, you're most likely to see a pole in the ground, and probably in the grassy part of the the sidewalk area, if there even is a sidewalk there. And so it's not a very dignified waiting experience for people. I think it's really important for us to be thinking like the entire trip is not just the trip on the vehicle, but also the time that you're waiting for the vehicle. So so one of the things we're trying to do at DART is we're going to launch DART Zoom. That's going to work on the network itself and the routes and the frequencies of service. But our next step, because DART Zoom is just the first step, our next step is to really work on the waiting experience, speeding up the buses so that buses have priority. You know, if you're sitting on a bus with 40 other people, why should you have to yield to 40 people in single occupant vehicles? That's just not really the priority that we want to have on our streets. I always tell people that, you know, our congestion problems are really economic issues. Space is the commodity that we're talking about. How we use that space is really important. Space is in short supply. There's high demand on that space. So why don't we think about how we allocate that space to the people who use the least amount of space? That would be a bus. That might be a biker. That might be a walker. Because a single occupant vehicle is not very efficient. And by the way, Uber with one person in it besides the driver is also a single occupant vehicle as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. Do you happen to know, and I don't mean to put you on the spot for numbers, what the percentage breakdown of users of the system are between bus and rail?
Actually, at DART, it's close. It's not exactly even. I want to say pre-pandemic, it was like something about around 135,000 on bus, about 100,000 on rail. Not quite 100,000 on rail.
So I would have guessed that it was skewed more heavily towards the bus side, which sounds like what it is, which I think is interesting to me, because if you read about DART as a system, it's about 90% coverage rail and 10% coverage bus. And to me, that's always a reflection of sort of the invisible nature of people who rely on the bus as a way to get around. And it's really interesting to me how much attention the rail system gets versus the bus system, when the bus system is in fact moving more people. And that's why I think it's important that you talk about these ideas that relate to, okay, how do we maximize the efficiency of buses, and how do we sort of change the perceptual relationship of buses to cars on our streets? So I wonder if, and I'm, look, here's the disclosure. I'm probably going to be guilty of this, of leaning towards rail again, but I want to front this bus thing, because I want to get into, you know, who is riding it, how that's different from the rail system, and why that's so important. So let me just put that on the table for you.
Okay, well, let me first start by saying thank you for caring about the bus, because it is so hard sometimes to be a bus advocate. You know, buses and bus riders are often marginalized. When I talk about the bus riders on the DART system, and this is very consistent with the LA Metro system, mostly people of color, mostly low income, most don't have access to cars. I don't know the statistic about how many of them don't speak English here in the North Texas region. I know that in Los Angeles, it was very high percentage of people who did not speak English who rode the bus. So we're talking about, you know, the most marginalized populations in our communities. And you know, that's really what keeps me up at night, is we don't treat them that well. And we really need to. And if we leverage the bus system and all of its power the way that it has potential to do, we could really change the way everyone's life is. You know, we can really empower them, really give them access. You know, the DART Zoom project that we're working on right now and launching on January 24th, in every demographic, we have provided better access to jobs within a 30-minute ride on the bus. Every single demographic in the Dallas-Fort Worth region. So that is a huge difference to what we had before. I agree with you. I think we can totally leverage the bus system. I think we can increase the number of buses that we're operating. I think we can provide a lot better access. And if we do things right, our ridership should be 500,000 a day on the bus side. The light rail system, 93 miles, 65 stations, for us to be carrying only 100,000 passengers a day is pretty low. So to me, we should work on the system that we have and improve that system, make it work super well for people, and then see where we go from there.
Can you elaborate? You've mentioned the Silver Line, and explain what that is, where that goes, all that, and when we're expected to be able to access it.
Yeah, so the Silver Line is our 26-mile commuter rail corridor that goes from DFW to Shiloh Road in Plano. There's 10 stations. It goes through 7 cities. And it basically is our big east-west connection. You talked about sort of the circular loop route around with rail, and I would say that it's sort of like the first piece of that if we were to have a full loop at some point in the future. It's under construction right now. I will admit that we've had a lot of hiccups with it, and so just now, I think we executed the contract a couple of years ago before I was here, but it's just now really getting under construction, and by the end of the year, I think the entire line will be under construction. People are moving dirt, moving utilities, they'll start to put in the foundations for all the bridges. So it's really exciting. You're going to see a lot of activity out there in the next couple of years. I think it was originally supposed to open maybe even next year, but I think it's going to be more like 2024 at this point. But we're still trying to figure that out, so we're hoping that it'll be open by then.
And what's happening in downtown Dallas with the subway?
So the D2 subway is on a pause right now. We've had a couple of hiccups. The Dallas City Council approved the proposed alignment. It's called the Locally Preferred Alternative. In March, they approved that. Contingent upon resolving some issues on the east end of the project, where the tunnel daylights in Deep Ellum. So the last few months have been spent working with the Deep Ellum Foundation and the City of Dallas, trying to figure out how we want to connect that portion of the alignment to the rest of the system. So it sounds like we've come to an agreement on what the preferred alignment would be. So we have to do some changes to all of our environmental work and bring our engineering for this new alignment up to the same level as the previous. I will tell you that there are some operational impacts of this new alignment that will impact communities in the southeast and the southwest that aren't directly in, you know, the downtown area. So we have to do a lot of due diligence to talk to the communities about what that means and see if we can come to an agreement on the future of D2. So there's that due diligence piece related to the alignment itself. We've also been asked to look at the future of ridership, the future demand for travel demand for the downtown area, just sort of a la the pandemic, because obviously ridership is down significantly right now. And because of that, I think it's important for us to understand what businesses are planning to do for return to work, hybrid work situations, what the long-term plan is for the downtown area, because obviously we were like a hub and spoke system, and of course during the pandemic, that's sort of been thrown out the window. So we really need to talk about what the future is and how soon we would really need to provide that investment, because we're talking $2 billion here. And so when I think about $2 billion, we have the money to do it. We could certainly do it now. If we pause it for a few years, what does that do for our cash flow, and what does that free us up to do from a cash flow perspective, and what could we do sooner as a result of that, since we don't need it right away? So that's a little complex, but
it is. But it gets to the heart of this really interesting and complicated, I think, political and social vision of what DART is, and that D2 alignment, for whatever reason, hits a lot of buttons that people have about what DART is supposed to be in their mind, which is this urban, rail-centered system that kind of has those Chicago, Manhattan sort of bells on them. And to me, that gets at what I think is both the great opportunity for DART and the one of the great reasons why DART gets a lot of the criticism that it does, because people have in their imaginations that around these rail stops were going to be this extraordinary urban development that was going to change the face, be transformational for Dallas. And I think some of that you actually do see. There are places where that Mockingbird Station is a good example. I think we see some of that in Irving, even, of development around rail lines. But I wonder if you can sort of look into the crystal ball and say what you think these rail line stations might look like in the future. And let me add one little element to that. We had an editorial the other day about partnering with the city around parking lots to make sure that we have an affordable housing element at these rail stations. So let me just put all that out there and get you to talk about what does this system look like in the future versus what people imagine it might look like?
These are all such great questions, and wow, how long do we have to talk about them?
A little while.
Yeah, a little while. I really think that development around the stations will be critical. The cities are so crucial in that decision-making. The cities, I think, have to do some soul-searching on what they want their communities to look like. I always think that our transportation system writ large has to think about what it wants to be when it grows up. What do we want to do in the future? How does public transit dovetail with the highway system? How does the highway system dovetail with goods movement? How does microtransit and how do micro mobility options fit into that entire picture to fill in all the spaces where we don't do things well? So likewise, the cities have to decide, are we going to continue to prioritize the use of single occupancy vehicles by providing free parking or cheap parking? Are we going to continue to require developers to put in exorbitant amounts of parking to encourage more vehicle use? Because it all works together. We can make decisions right now as a region or even at the city level that we don't want to continue to have cars everywhere on the streets, because it's expensive. It's expensive for the cities to maintain all the streets. It's expensive for them to not have or to have underutilized land that's just dedicated to parking. When you look at, I love looking at aerial photos of any region because you can see just how much space is given up to have cars driving around, or trucks, again, driving around. And we just have to decide as a community what we want our future to look like. And I think that's a heavy, heavy conversation, obviously fraught with lots and lots of politics and opinions. But, while we're saying, we need to deal with congestion, it's like, okay, let's remember that congestion is caused by our prioritization of cars.
That's it exactly. And one of the reasons I love being a journalist in Dallas right now, and I think it's a really cool time to do this work, and it's probably a really cool time for you to do your work in Dallas right now, is we are at that pivot point. We are at that place in time and history where these choices are upon us, right? And I don't even know if they're choices at this point. They're realities that we have to face. And one of them is just what our zoning and development rules look like, which is kind of boring meat and potatoes, city hall stuff. But if we have a certain amount of set aside, right, for parking at the new Costco or at the bar in Lakewood or whatever, we're making a choice about the value of our land and our future. And I think it's becoming harder, not simply politically, but just physically, to prejudice that choice towards the automobile. And DART is right there at that intersection, no pun intended, we're gonna move in that direction. So just pick up that thread of thought. I mean, how do you gear up DART to make sure we're ready for that?
So my goals for the coming year are largely centered around our internal organization and trying to set up our internal organization for what's coming. We really need to change our own mindset. DART has an incredible staff that is very good at communicating with each other and trying to do a lot of great things. What we want to do is align all the things that we're doing and all the talents that we have to achieve sort of that North Star, sort of single objective, which is really improving mobility overall. Now, improving mobility means that we got to figure out how we serve the customer better. It means we need to empower our staff and take care of our people. And it also means we need to be a partner across the region. I'm talking about all these things, but I'm the new kid on the block, and I have no idea really how well received any of my ideas will be, because I could be the radical Californian who's coming in and taking away individual rights, and I don't
right.
want to do
You're
that.
You're already suspicious.
Yeah. Well, I just, I want to be realistic here because I understand the environment that I'm working in, but I also understand that, people do complain about traffic all the time. And there are solutions to that do not involve continuing to take more land for more highways and bigger interchanges. And it's dangerous. There are safer ways for us to travel. There are ways for us to work together and provide opportunities. When I say we need to increase ridership on the rail system, I'm not telling every individual that they have to give up their car. That is not what I'm saying. I always say, we've got to allow people to travel in whatever means makes the most sense to them, but give them the option to take a more efficient mode if that is something that they want to do. We haven't quite done that yet here. We have a lot of opportunities to do that and make it better, and I think we can do that. It'll take a while, but if we can get the small cohort of people who just want to do that, then I think we'll be moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I think the great example is going to a Mavericks or a Stars game, right? That's the easiest way to do it, and also if you have a couple beers or whatever, you're going to be safe and take the train. But how do we create more experiences like that? The only other place I think that we go destination-wise is to the State Fair. Are there other spots that I'm missing that are good, take the DART option?
Well, I actually, again, because I'm new here, I do hear people complain about how they can't get to a Cowboys game on transit. And of course, anybody who goes to a big event, if you're driving to the event, you're waiting a long time to get out of that parking lot.
And paying for parking.
And paying for parking, although the tailgating, I guess, could be. But I think we care a lot about making sure that event writers, we call them event writers, and we care a lot that event writers want to use DART to go to those events. But the thing to remember is that we have people who are riding our system every single day. There are regular commuters or regular riders. And we need to take care of them first. I always call them today's riders. And the idea here is just to make sure that we make today's riders' experience as good as possible. And then, hopefully it'll be so good that other people will come also. And so, this is called the curb cut effect. I don't know if you've heard this term, but in California, Angela Glover Blackwell, I think is her name. She developed something called the curb cut effect, which is just the theory that, at the time when people started putting ADA ramps at all the corners of intersections to help people who are in wheelchairs, they realized after they did it that it actually helps people who are pushing strollers, it helps people who are walking with walkers. So it was actually good for everyone. So if you take care of the most vulnerable population, you help everyone. And so that's the philosophy that we're following at DART.
Well, let me get just a little bit futuristic here, because transportation is changing in so many ways and so rapidly with, electric vehicles, driverless vehicles. I can't even begin to know what the sort of rail technology changes that are available are out there. But what does DART's driverless future look like? Its electric future? What does the technological future of the rail line look like? How are those things going to change for us? And I'll add another piece to it. How does it impact your ability to function if, say, we are all in driverless cars?
So automation is always really interesting, and I know that when I started in Los Angeles, that was when automation became such a hot topic, and it's actually kind of died down a little bit, at least in the transit industry. I think people have started to realize that having driverless cars doesn't actually solve our capacity problems, because if maybe you don't have to park anymore, but maybe that'll save you money. But if you're it's hard enough having a single occupant vehicle running around, but if you have a zero occupant vehicle running around in addition to single occupant vehicles, I'm not sure that's we're not going to go on road diets for that, let's put it that way. And so when I think of automation, the opportunity that I think of is what I refer to as a virtual bus lane. This is the idea that you have a connected vehicle-to-vehicle communications that connects the bus to the vehicles or the single-occupant vehicles or trucks or whatever that surround it, so that when the bus comes, other vehicles give way, and then the bus is never delayed. That would be an amazing development. It's actually being developed in Singapore. I know it's been studied there. At least it was 2 years ago, so I don't know where it is right now, and I'm going to look it up. But I'm ready for that technology whenever it comes online. I think the primary advantage for automation is really in terms of safety. I mean, we see that with our private vehicles right now. It'll alert you when you get off, out of the lane, or if you're getting close to another vehicle. Those are great advances. The driverless vehicle technology, it'd be great if we could do that for our buses, or maybe for to serve areas that are difficult to serve, or if we have a shortage of operators. Those are some great opportunities. These things, though, are very fraught with a lot of challenges, a lot of politics. Obviously, we don't suggest automation as a way to kick people out of their jobs, right? So we have a whole workforce that we want to take care of, who have served us well, and we don't want to leave them out at the curb, so to speak. So there are a lot of challenges related to that. Leveraging technology, DART has a GoPass app that's really trying to aggregate a number of different services so that people can have more seamless travel, so that you only have to have one app in order to call your Uber or your microtransit option and then transfer over to our rail system or our bus system. So there's some real options for putting technology in people's hands and making it super convenient for them to access information about their trip, to pay for their trip, and all that stuff. So the technology is really great. It's allowed us to do a lot of things. Microtransit is just like historically like a call and ride system, but now you can do it with an app. Paratransit, you can call for your service with an app now, and it actually, you don't have to make a reservation 72 hours in advance like people used to, and there's much more chance that somebody's going to actually show up at your door. So again, like trying to use technology to really help people with their trips. The thing that I always want to remind people is that, it's technology is so great, but before we go running after the shiny new object, we have to know what problem we're trying to solve first, and then look for the technology that can help us solve that problem.
Yeah, the problem is journalists like me, we love the shiny new thing, right?
Don't everybody does.
And what about moving the fleet more into an electric capacity? I know there have been a lot of steps taken, but I mean, do you have a sort of carbonless goal, or where are you in that area?
So I know that we have some buses that we're piloting, some electric buses that we're piloting. We have not yet said that we're going to completely convert to electric. And let me just tell you why this is always a challenging conversation, because I know there's a lot of movement towards electric, and it's a great thing. 40% of the emissions are from cars, right? Not our buses, but cars. And so I think it's, before we try to push into just completely converting a fleet of 700 vehicles to electric, we should think about how we're going to convert cars to electric, convert trucks to electric, and things like that. There's a lot of work being done in that space, but converting 700 vehicles to all electric isn't going to move the needle at all. I'm not opposed to it, but there are a lot of challenges, like with everything else. If you have to charge 700 vehicles overnight, what kind of a drawdown on the system is there? And do any of our electricity providers even have that kind of capacity? It's a real challenge. And then if you're relying on electricity to solely as your power source for both the rail and the bus, what happens when the power grid goes down and you need to charge? who gets a central use designation, who gets to fire up first when you need some priority for the power. So there are all kinds of issues that we have to explore that have nothing to do with the fact that you have an electric bus available to you. In addition to that, how are we going to charge? You know, we've got to do a huge capital investment to put charging in all of our divisions. And then if our routes are too long, we're going to have to figure out a way to do inline charging. So, you know, I'm not saying this to say that we don't want to do it, but certainly if that is something if that is something that becomes a priority for DART and for the region, then I think we need to figure out a way to do that.
So, Nadine, as we wrap up our conversation, I want to close with kind of just a question of looking at yourself as the CEO here. What do you want your legacy to be when you're done working at DART?
My legacy, I hope, is that I leave behind a huge cohort of people who care very deeply about improving journeys for our customers. That is the most important thing, because I think that's the only way we're going to really get people riding transit and really loving transit. I always say to people that I really want people to love transit and I want them to love DART. And I just think about that with a huge heart, because in my mind, you know, if we can really capture the attention of the rider and really treat them well, I always tell people it's a courtship, that we're developing a lifelong relationship with our customers. And if we can really find a way to engage them for their lives and for their children's lives, then I think we've done our part.
Well, we'll be cheering you on from the sidelines here. Nadine Lee, thank you so much for visiting the Deep Side of Dallas. To our audience, thank you for listening to our podcast. Feel free to email us at deepside@dallasnews.com with questions, comments, and ideas. For Rudy Bush, I'm Paul Corliss. We'll talk to you soon. The Deep Side of Dallas podcast is brought to you by the Dallas Morning News and the University of North Texas System. The show is produced by Andrew Sherman.
If you like what you heard today, please follow the Dallas Morning News wherever you get your podcasts. You'll also get our daily news roundup and special audio reports. And if you have questions, comments, or guest ideas, we want to hear from you. Just email us at deepside@dallasnews.com. Until next time, I'm Rudy Bush.
And I'm Paul Corliss. Thanks for listening.